Hello, my name is Chip Lang. You are listening to Total EM. As a little surprise and a little throwback from the Simpa 360 2017 conference, I'm going to throw in something just to help promote that Simpa 360's 2018 conference is coming up. And we had a nice little interview that I had saved, and you should also be able to hear it elsewhere, but I wanted to throw it in here as well about skin and soft tissue infections with Robert Dax. You may notice some audio changes with this recording too, at least for the intro part. I'm working on a new audio system, more about that to come, but let me know your feedback and what you hear from that. Otherwise, let's get straight into the actual podcast.
I'm here with Robert Dax, and we are talking about soft tissue infections. And so there are a couple of key points that I think he wanted to talk about in the lecture, and if he can go over that in just a few minutes.
Well, thank you very much. I enjoyed my lecture here today at SEMPA, and I focused on soft tissue infections involving strep and staph. I find in my emergency department, many people just say the term, oh, the infections, staph and strep, staph and strep, staph and strep. And I wanted to focus on breaking that down a little bit. So when we're talking about strep soft tissue infections, we're talking about only one organism. That's group A beta-hemolytic strep, that's strep pyogenes. That's the organism that will account for every and almost all soft tissue infections, anything from simple erysipelas down to cellulitis and even result in necrotizing fasciitis. All one organism. On the other hand, when we talk about staph and staph soft tissue infections, we see either a non-purulent form of staph that's due to methicillin-sensitive staph aureus, or, as many of you are probably seeing now, abscesses showing up that are due to community-acquired MRSA. So the community-acquired MRSA organism raised its head somewhere in the mid-90s and has become nationwide a real nuisance. We're seeing more and more soft tissue infections nationwide due to this organism, which is very, very different than the hospital-acquired MRSA organism that plagued our ICUs for many decades. The hospital-acquired MRSA is often due to the strain USA 100. On the other hand, the community-acquired MRSA that causes all these abscesses is the strain known as USA 300. And after you do the IND on these abscesses, and if you were to culture these abscesses and wanted to provide antibiotics, you'll find that the community-acquired MRSA has sensitivity typically to trimethoprim sulfa, doxycycline, clindamycin, and linezolid. A couple of comments about each of those antibiotics to use. First of all, do you need an antibiotic? The antibiotics do seem to help decrease early recurrence. A very recent study by Dave Talon and colleagues showed about a 7% decrease if you added your antibiotic after your IND. So there seems to be some help with preventing an early recurrence. Again, when it comes to antibiotics, we talked about trimethoprim sulfa. You have your option of using one trimethoprim sulfa tablet or two tablets. There's been no good study that says two is better than one or one's better than two, so completely your option. Doxycycline is a good choice. When it comes to clindamycin, clinda is useful. However, certain strains of community-acquired MRSA have an inducible gene for resistance to clindamycin. That is, if you get a culture report back with the sensitivities that say sensitive to clindamycin, there are some strains that as soon as they see the clindamycin, they will create resistance. So you have to be aware, and many of your labs will do what they call a diffusion test, a diffusion disc test, or a D test, to help define whether that strain of community-acquired MRSA has this inducible gene for resistance. So look for that and check with your labs if they're doing that test. When it comes to recurrence for community-acquired MRSA, like what I see in my emergency department, many patients keep coming back, because they're colonized with community-acquired MRSA. Many people think it's just due to colonization in their nose. That is a common culprit, but it also can be colonized in the perineum, the axilla, or even the throat. So there's other areas that patients can be harboring their community-acquired MRSA that's going to give them problems. how to get rid of that MRSA? Well, the IDSA doesn't have any good, real good answers. They do make some suggestions about decolonizing with mupirocin, as well as chlorhexidine baths. The data on whether that works is still out for question. So I hope this is helpful. It helps give you some focus on strep and staph soft tissue infections.
All right. Like I said, a bunch of quick pearls there. And keep in mind that the actual interview was recorded with another different recording system. So hopefully with what you're listening now, this is a little bit better and you like the way it sounds. If not, please let me know. We'll plan accordingly. But until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.